Welcome to Reversible, the podcast where we explore the connection between your gut health and your overall health. And today we're talking about vegetables. Should we eat vegetables or are they actually really terrible? Well, if you listen to episode 15 titled Why You Should Never Eat Vegetables Again, you might have some questions because if you're like many of our other listeners, it may have shattered the very fabric of your reality. After all, for years now, we've been told that vegetables are good and that things like eggs and red meat are bad. Now, if you've not heard episode 15, then you might be a little bit lost, so I'll catch up to speed. We did an interview with Dr. Anthony Chafee, who's a world-renowned MD and neurosurgical resident who's strictly carnivore and consumes nothing but red meat and water and has for almost a decade. Now, he's in incredible shape. His skin is perfect. He doesn't sunburn. He's extremely muscular and an accomplished athlete. Now, if it sounds like I'm crushing, I probably do have a bit of a bro crush, but my wife even calls him the hot meat guy. So, can you blame me? Now, Dr. Chafee actually talked me into going carnivore, and I've been heavily animal-based ever since. And you just hear the tippy taps in the background. That's Bruce running around. So my carnivore diet, or near carnivore, is basically just fatty red meat and berries. Now, I eat about 2 pounds of fatty red meat a day and some berries and nothing else. That's blackberries, blueberries, raspberries. And I've never felt better. My blood is almost perfect. My stool samples improved tenfold. I've measured my bacteria. My energy and strength are up. I feel more mentally clear. I'm more energetic. And frankly, I'm smarter. My brain works better. And so off the back of episode 15, one of our listeners, Olivia Shockley, actually wrote a question back about the carnivore diet, which says, how many of these benefits are actually from ceasing the highly processed standard American diet? And does this mean that all the research on the Mediterranean diet is bogus? I'd love to hear a response to this. Well, Olivia, being a gut specialist in Crohn's and colitis, this episode is my response to your question. So we're going to talk about vegetables. Now, I do want to let you guys know that I'm actually nonpartisan towards diets specifically, except vegan. I will never recommend vegan. But as a point of interest, side note, Renee Lynn also wrote in saying dangerous diet and disgusting. So clearly this diet is not for everyone because some people just hate science. But I'm going to talk about the pros and cons of both sides, and we're going to dive into all this. Now, I do want to say there's merit to many different types of diets. But in my case, with the carnivore diet, my blood labs and stool samples don't lie. Now, in this episode, here's what we're talking about. Number one, whether vegetables are good or bad. Two, who should or should not eat vegetables? Three, which sort of vegetables we should or should not eat? And four, what circumstances might warrant either a meat-based or more of a plant-based diet? And of course, I do want to mention how I strategically use plants and meats as a gut specialist in helping my Crohn's and colitis clients reverse their gut disease. So let's get right into it. Now, my name is Josh Dank. I'm an ex-paramedic, holistic nutritionist, gut specialist, and medical lecturer, and I specialize in helping people reverse Crohn's and colitis, which is the worst digestive disease that you can get. And if we can help them, we can help you have a healthy gut too. Now, before we do this, I do, of course, want to remind you guys these episodes are for information and educational purposes only. They're not intended to substitute professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. So let's talk about vegetables. Are they good or are they bad? Now, I look at vegetables being one of those things that we have to look at in context. There are vegetables that have been around for a very long time. There are GMO'd vegetables. They're genetically modified. They're artificial. And there are things that are relatively new in the breeding or the gene pool that we've never really been designed to break down, digest, or absorb. And so these vegetables, in my opinion, can be highly problematic. And so to answer the question, which vegetables should we eat? We want to go back to the ones that have been around even longer. Now, if we go back to which fruits or vegetables have been around the longest, we can look at things like dates and figs, right? They've been around the Mediterranean diet. They're even talked about in the Bible. They've been around for a very, very long time, as well as things like carrots and onions. They've been around for a very long time. But if we look at some of the newer fruits and vegetables, we look at Honeycrisp apples, these cotton candy grapes, which have actually just in the 21st century been GMO'd and modified and crossbred. Look at broccolini. These are just, 30, 40 years old. And so we talk about old and new vegetables. The question is, who's to say? We have to figure out based on the information we do have. So we know, for example, grapes and pomegranates have been around longer for fruits, whereas cabbage and radishes have been around a long time for vegetables. But if we look at fruits, for example, we know there are some newer ones like sunburst squash and these things with novelty names. Those are a bit newer. Do we want to avoid them? Maybe, maybe not. It depends on the GMOs. Now we have to look as well at GMOs. Are these GMO vegetables? Are they something that's been bred in the traditional GMO sense, like corn and soy, where it's actually designed to resist all these pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, and rodenticides, and all the other sides? Or have they just been crossbred through splicing and, you know, not the type of genetic modification to resist, but that to accept that of other genes, where we have like a grapple, where it's like an apple that tastes like a grape? These types of things might be less problematic, but they're not something I'd still like to experiment with, because again, they're relatively new and we truthfully don't know if they have any negative applications or implications to humans. And so let's take that one step further. What vegetables should we eat or should we not eat? So I look at vegetables even less so in the sense of what's old and what's new, but more so what's toxic and what's not. If I'm looking at vegetables, for example, I want to consult with the classic list, the EWG. That's going to be the Environmental Working Group. Now, if I look at something, for example, called the Clean 15 Guide, the Environmental Working Group does a new list every single year. They update based on the 15 cleanest, don't have to worry about them types of fruits and vegetables. These are the ones with the least amount of pesticides. Or on the contrary, of course, they have the Dirty Dozen, which are the 12 you want to watch for, which can be highly toxic. So currently on the Clean 15 list, as of today, or the 2023 rather, was the last time they published this list, we have things like avocados and sweet corn. Now remember, sweet corn, highly GMO, so I'd avoid that one. But other things like pineapples, papaya, onions, sweet potatoes, they have asparagus, kiwi, honeydew melon, mushrooms, cabbage, mangoes, carrots, watermelon, and sweet potatoes are all on this Clean 15 list. So that's something we can typically look at and say, okay, well, these ones have a lot less pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, and things, so we don't need to shop for those specifically organic. The Clean 15 list is a pretty safe list to go ahead and just buy from. Now, if we're looking at toxicity, we have to, of course, go back to the other side of the Dirty Dozen list. So as of 2023, the last publishing by the EWG, the list of things that if you're going to eat them, either A, don't eat them at all, or B, buy them organic. I'll read the whole list of the Dirty Dozen list to you. That's strawberries, spinach, as well as kale and collard mustard greens or collard greens, peaches, pears, nectarines, apples, grapes, bell peppers and hot peppers, cherries, blueberries, and green beans. These 12 are the most pesticide-ridden foods. Now, Gary Brecka, known as a human biologist who's helped people predict when they would die for insurance companies, he's got 10X Health as a company. He's been running that for many, many years. And they've recently blown up. And he actually has cited a study. Now, I can't find it, so don't quote me on this one. But he cited a study saying they took strawberries, non-organic, so pesticide-filled strawberries, and they put the juice into a commercial juice press. And they took all the juice out and used it to respray crops with the same efficacy as fresh pesticides because they've absorbed so much of it. Now, again, that's anecdotal. I've not found the study myself, but I do trust the guy and some of the things he'll quote. He's quite brilliant, has a photographic memory. So the idea being, if you're going to eat fruits and vegetables, even bypassing what's new, what's old on genetic levels, we also want to look at the Dirty Dozen and Clean 15 lists from the Environmental Working Group. And you can simply go to EWG.org and look those up, or just search them on Google to see what's safe, what's not. And so the question then has to be asked, are vegetables safe? Because of course, we're referencing the carnivore diet from Dr. Anthony Chafee from episode 15. Now, he says vegetables are bad. They produce sulforaphanes and oxalates and all these toxins. Guys like Paul Saladino talk about the same. That's carnivore MD. Dr. Sean Baker, they're all carnivores. It's meat or it's meat animal based with a side of fruits and some other things like honey and maple syrup, but no vegetables. And so are vegetables inherently bad? Here's my opinion on it. I don't believe so. Even though I am a meat eater, I eat 2 pounds of red meat a day and berries, I don't eat any other vegetables. But here's the thing, guys, it is circumstantial. Everything has to be circumstantial. Now, I know for myself, I've been dealing with some bacterial overgrowth in my gut. Now, if you've heard me talk about it before, just about a year ago, I was dealing with a really nasty sinus infection. So if we go back 15 years to my first root canal, my upper right molar, what ended up happening was my tooth cracked, whether it was martial arts or wrestling, I don't remember, but my tooth cracked. And so infection got inside, it got into the root and it created a nasty infection. The only way to get that out is the dentist said, well, we have to root canal it. I said, okay. So they went in, they tried to inject all these anesthesia, right? Of course, they had their numbing injections that they put in the area, the lidocaine and everything else. Now, something you may not know is that when there's a lot of white blood cell activity in the area, you metabolize or break down these numbing agents very, very quickly. So typically they'll use 1 or 2 carpules of anesthesia when giving someone a root canal. That's going to be 1 or 2 syringe injections. they used 8 or 9 with me. I forget how many, but I was absolutely numb from the top of my head down to below my nipple on the right-hand side. I was fully numb, couldn't feel anything. And I could still feel them doing the root canal because that tooth, all the white blood cells in the area, kept breaking down that anesthesia. And they had no choice. They had to drill. So I got a root canal. And talking about it now, I'm getting shivers. I had a root canal done without anesthetic, which is basically medieval torture. And so they must have missed something because as it turns out here, 15, 16 years later now, I was in my teens at the time, now in my 30s, I recently, just a year ago, had a cleaning done and opened something up. And it turns out they missed one of those root canals or one of those tiny canals back 15, 16 years ago. And so what happened is after that cleaning, a little bit of bacteria got in, the area was already set up for disaster, and it climbed up inside my sinuses and my tooth abscessed. And I had this really nasty root canal issue, or this really nasty bacterial infection, which of course I ended up getting the tooth extracted. What happened over the last 15 years is a little bit of infection had actually worn through, it chewed through the bottom of my tooth, or should say the top of my tooth, because it's the upper molar, into my sinus cavity. And for 15 years, I never thought anything of it. I had this little bit of post-nasal drip. I thought it was allergies. I'm blowing my nose 4 or 5 times a day. No big deal. Well, it turns out that infection had actually eaten away the bone inside my sinuses entirely. So that bone that should be protecting your sinuses from your teeth did not exist. On my x-rays, I had a hole in my sinus. And so this infection climbed up from my tooth to the lower part of my sinus behind my cheekbone, into the one in my nose, all the way up into the sinus behind my eye or around my forehead, there, just above the eye, called the frontal sinus. And so what ended up happening is the infection got so bad, it was a really nasty staph infection. And for those who are squeamish, turn the volume down. Those who are not, keep listening. It was this really dark, green, thick, smelly mucus. I was blowing my nose 20 plus times a day. The infection was so severe. And so if I didn't do anything about it, what would end up happening is this infection would burrow through my sinuses at the top of my head and effectively get into my brain, causing brain disease and all kinds of other stuff. So I had to do something about it. Now, it took a year, Canadian healthcare, to get me in and do surgery on this thing. I had to go in and scope and clean up my sinuses. And so what ended up happening, I'm getting back to the vegetable section here, is it threw off my gut bacteria because all this infection was in my blood and my lymphatic system and, of course, getting swallowed a lot of the time. And so the staph bacteria got in and caused destruction inside of my gut. I ended up with a nasty candida infection. I'm still dealing with it today. It's been months of work, but candida can take a lot of time. Now that was compounded on an underlying low-grade candida issue I can trace back now, knowing what I know, that I've had since I was a teenager. So that's been compounding for 15 years, developing all these microscopic problems. Now, here's where the vegetables come in. I've got all these overgrowths. For me, these candida and other bacteria, they love carbs, starches, fibers, and sugars, and all kinds of stuff they can break down for food. And so a carnivore-based diet is better for me because it reduces symptoms, because it happens to starve off all of these bacteria that I've now had overgrown from the sinus infection. And so for those wondering, should I eat vegetables, should I not? The question has to be asked, do you have some kind of bacterial overgrowth? If you do, you might feel really good on an animal-based, meat-based diet. On the other hand, I've had clients come to see me who have overgrowths of some bad, which we can bring down, who need the seeding and the growth of good bacteria, which can be done through certain proteins and other things. But there have been GI maps, right? Stool samples I've seen where people's bacteria imbalances indicate, I'm going to try them on some plant foods to see how they do, some more greens, some more fruits, some more vegetables, while giving things like probiotics or spore probiotics, which are like seeds to trees that grow fruit. And so we've tried to use different plant-based diets with, of course, meat in there to optimize the bacterial profiles, and I've seen it help. And those with overgrowth, I've seen it be a problem. And so working in gut disease and gut space, I do tend to recommend one set of diets versus another, more extreme, heavily plants or heavily animal-based, because we're dealing with extreme circumstances. Ultimately, I don't believe there's anything wrong with people eating vegetables as a general rule, provided their guts can handle it. Going back to using the ancient vegetables, ones that have been around a long time, not recently cultivated or grown, provided they match the clean 15 and dirty dozen lists. We know what's good, what's bad, what's toxic, what's not. Those are very important things to consider. And so that sort of answers the question, I hope, here for you, Olivia, about what vegetables we should or should not eat. Should we eat them at all or not? And so we'll go back to the question she asked, which is, has all the research on the Mediterranean diet been bogus? I say no. There are so many different variables that we have to look at to consider. Are plants good for me or bad for me? Can my gut tolerate plants? can it not? Is there a problem with these plants as far as toxicity? It's the question has to be asked. And I just don't believe we have the research today because it's so conflicting. Is it the vegetables and the fruits that are the problem themselves, or is what's sprayed on the vegetables and plants that are the problem? Is it the bacterial dysbiosis we now have that's the problem, not allowing us to break down these vegetables? Now, one of my previous episodes, I actually talked about a study done where they brought up a bunch of GI maps and stool samples from those living in Nigeria versus those in North America. And they actually compared data from those in an urbanized Nigeria versus a rural Nigeria. So living in cities versus living on the farms and working on farmland versus those in large urban centers like large cities in the United States. And they found that babies with their gut bacteria newly coming in, newly born, newly grown, who are seeding now, breastfeeding from mom, getting all these microbes, they have more diverse guts than adults do in North America. But it also indicated, right, because that's what we typically see, is that babies and adults have very different microbiomes. On the other hand, this study also indicated that babies in rural Nigeria versus adults in rural Nigeria had much more similar microbiomes, which indicates to me that those who live in cities or consuming a lot of these imported foods covered in pesticides, herbicides, fungicides tend to have more depleted microbiota. They did show in this study as well that adults living in Nigeria in the urban centers had less diversity of microbiota than those living on the land still. And those living on the land still in the farms in rural Nigeria, the babies and the adults had more similar microbiomes, indicating that living in cities and large urban centers actually degrades our microbiota. And they also showed in this study the measurement showing that fiber breaking down, the fiber consuming, fiber reducing bacteria, which would allow us to eat a lot of these plant vegetables and different fibers, are now depleted. And so the question is, are vegetables and plants inherently bad, or have our bodies just been sort of beaten up and our microbiomes beaten up so much from our foods, diet, lifestyles, and toxins being put in our food that we're no longer able to consume a lot of these plants and vegetables and other nutrients that have been shown in plant-based diets like Mediterranean diets to be beneficial? And so we have to ask, are the vegetables and fruits themselves the problem, or is it the condition in which our bodies are living that makes them problematic because we've lost so much diversity over years? These studies from Nigeria, for example, would indicate that in fact, fruits and vegetables would be fine if we had the bacteria to break them down. And it's now indicated that a lot of us no longer do. And so that's a roundabout way, Olivia, of saying, I don't believe fruits and vegetables are bad. I feel like perhaps the research indicates, and through my experience working in gut disease, that a lot of us living in Western cultures who already have gut issues, 70%+ of Americans have indicated they have gut issues at least once a week, gas, bloat, diarrhea, constipation, pain, cramping, or something else. Now, these digestive issues indicate, of course, changes to our microbiomes, toxicity levels, and all kinds. And now we are unable to eat these fruits and vegetables. And so my argument is this: if you eat fruits and vegetables and feel really good, you don't have gas, bloat, lethargy, fatigue, aches, pains, skin issues, toenail fungus, brittle hair, dry skin, hormonal issues, you are the picture of health and you're eating organic food, especially growing your own, you're probably fine to just eat whatever you want. But if you have any kind of medical condition or symptoms, it might be worth considering, what is in my food? What damage has been caused? And should I consider more of a carnivore or meat-based diet? And if your symptoms do reduce from that, looking at people like Michaela Peterson from the Lion Diet, all kinds of people, thousands and thousands, tens or hundreds of thousands of people have tried these animal-based carnivore diets and gotten better. Is it the fruits and vegetables that are the problem, or is it the circumstances and conditions in which our bodies are trying to break them down that is problematic? So I hope that gives you guys some food for thought, no pun intended, but that's all for this episode of Reversible, the ultimate gut health podcast. Guys, we're here to talk about poop and digestion so you don't have to. Remember, life's too short to feel like shit, and we'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to Reversible. Now, if you don't know this, the mission of this podcast is to put your health back into your hands so you can heal yourself rather than relying on doctors and drugs. And I believe this information should be accessible to everyone for free. But the only way to reach everyone is if you share this. So if you've enjoyed this episode and really feel like you've gotten some value from it, if you could just take a second and click the share button and send this to a friend or share it on social media, it would mean the world to me and it would get this message to more people. So if you could do that now, I would be eternally grateful.